Hello, students, and welcome to Class of X, the free internet course on how to read and enjoy the X-Men comics better. I'm your teacher and host, John Reisinger, and today we are talking about the Merc with a Mouth himself, Deadpool. That's right, we're doing another character spotlight episode. Hi, everybody. Sorry that this episode is coming out a bit later than it's usually scheduled to come out. I got really sick last week. The joys of having children. You basically send them off to school, and they go out there, and they gather up all the best germs and viruses possible, and they bring them back, and they present them to you lovingly, to you, their parent. And they say, here, I got this for you. And when your kids get sick, you just basically know, okay, in about 3 days, I'm going to get sick. And that's what happened to me last week, and I completely lost my voice. It's still not even fully back. In fact, we'll see how long it lasts. This is going to be the longest I have done any content creation or recording since getting sick, and I can already tell this is going to be a little bit of a struggle. But I really wanted to get something out for you guys to enjoy, because I really appreciate your guys' patronage listening to the show, and I do love talking about the X-Men. And as of... what was it, yesterday or today? No, yesterday. Yesterday was the release. Sorry. Brain is full of Dayquil. The Deadpool Wolverine trailer came out, and I was so excited to wake up and find a little surprise on YouTube for me to watch. And I felt like it might be a good time to maybe pause on talking about X-Men 97. We'll catch up on X-Men 97 next episode, because there's a lot of good stuff going on. I hope you guys are happy that we covered Grant Morrison's new X-Men run, considering the most recent episode involving Genosha. But with Deadpool and Wolverine having a trailer finally, and everyone being so hyped about these characters, I realized we really hadn't talked a lot about Deadpool on the show. And I wondered if a lot of people actually know his comic book origins. The movie follows his origins fairly closely, not entirely closely. It takes a lot of changes to make it a little bit different, and some would say better in some senses. But the comic book version of Deadpool is different, and I wanted to give you guys, as always with the show is a way of like, hey, here's how to know more about the X-Men characters, and maybe that'll help you enjoy them and maybe inspire you to go read some of their stories. So that's what we're going to do today. We're going to do a little bit of a deep dive into Deadpool and talk about where he came from, what he's all about. He's one of the most popular characters Marvel has ever created. No one could argue against that. He has been in a bajillion solo titles since his origins in 1990, which is not something that many characters from the Marvel Universe can say, especially characters that were not developed as a solo character from the get-go. Spider-Man was always Spider-Man, and so he was on his own. But Deadpool was like just this character created for the New Mutants comic, and then people loved him so much. And very similar to Wolverine, Marvel got like whiff of this and were like, oh, people like this, then let's put him in everything. And he's done not only those solo titles, but he's done so many crossover issues across the universe. He's done, you know, team ups and comics with Spider-Man and Cable and the Avengers and Iron Man and Hulk and Thunderbolts and Fantastic Four and X-Men and Captain America and Daredevil and everybody under the sun. He's definitely a important character from the Marvel Universe. And also, instead, considering this is going to be a general history review of Deadpool, or as best I can imagine, I normally when I want to do these character spotlights, I try to read most of, if not all of their appearances in comics. We did that with Nimrod. I wanted to teach you guys about my favorite pink robot. And I read all of his issues. That's doable with Nimrod, or easily doable with Nimrod. Deadpool has so many comic appearances, so many. He's been in the comics since 1991, and he's had so many issues come out with him since then, and so many little like one shots and mini series and alternate universe stuff. And I was like, I can't do that. I can't read all of that. So instead, we're going to kind of give a general history of who Deadpool is, like I said. And the history is going to be not my best guess, but my best attempt at giving you an accurate depiction of history, because there's two reasons why it's very hard to give the history of Deadpool. One, he doesn't even know his history because he has brain problems due to his like gray matter is constantly getting regenerated all the time. And then on top of that, scientists have constantly been messing with his memories with drugs. So Wade doesn't exactly remember his real story. And so then on top of that, he's also been passed around to so many writers for the past 30 odd years. And none of them have apparently agreed on what his canon should be. He's one of these weird characters that whenever Marvel hands him over, I don't think they check their homework and they just go, you can say whatever you want about Deadpool's origins. Do you want him to have dead parents? Okay, cool. Oh, you want his parents to be alive and living in Canada and have a room still for him? Okay, you can have that too. And it's just kind of anyone's ball game apparently with him. So we're going to try and teach you guys about Deadpool as best we can. And since everyone is so familiar with the Ryan Reynolds portrayal of him in his film, I think it's time we all sat down, did our homework, and learned who he is in the books. By we, as always, I mean I have done it, and now I'm going to feed it to you guys via an audio podcast. You're welcome. I did the homework for you. So let's start off with his like real world origins. Where did the character come from with his conception? Like I said, he first appeared in New Mutants number 98 in 1991 as a hired mercenary. He was created by Fabian Nicieza and Rob Liefeld. Liefeld had the look and name, basically had the design and like the name Deadpool. And Nicieza was like, okay, I'm the writer. I'll come up with the story. And yes, when they were conceiving this character, they both knew that he was basically a twinsie of DC Comics' Deathstroke, who's another super powerful mercenary who likes to use samurai swords and has, you know, a very specific looking costume. And they purposefully gave him his last name of Wilson to kind of almost make him like a cousin of Slade Wilson, who is Deathstroke from DC Comics. And so everyone's always been like, oh, they're like the same characters. Like the creators knew that as well. They did this on purpose. In fact, Liefeld is quoted as saying that Deadpool is kind of an amalgamation of basically Spider-Man and Wolverine. Hence his, you know, suit that kind of looks like a little bit of a Spider-Man knockoff, and the healing factor, which he literally not steals, but gets from Wolverine. Also, Liefeld was a huge fan of G.I. Joe's and has stated that Snake Eyes was also part of the kind of idea behind Deadpool. And so if you look at that character, it kind of makes sense. He was also originally written as like a total jerk villain. He wasn't a like an ambiguous like hero or somebody for people to root for. He was a bad guy. He was meant to be a villain, but as his popularity arose, as is common, he kind of was turned into a little bit of a hero and was given some ambiguous, moral urges that eventually became very strong, especially when it involved children. He became very protective of children, and that was even shown in the movie where, like, his first appearance in the movie, he's, like, doing a job for free, like pro bono for a youth. Also, part of his origin was that, you know, they wrote him as this, like, fourth wall breaking insane character, and they even kind of visually represented that with the way that his speech bubbles always appeared. If you haven't read a Deadpool comic, Deadpool's speech bubbles have always looked different from everyone else's. That's commonly done for certain characters in Marvel comics, as Guardians often have different speech bubbles and fonts for them. Sometimes the Thing from Fantastic Four has the same kind of thing. It's basically, if there's a visual difference in the speech bubble, it usually means that the character speaks differently from other characters, and that's what they wanted to do with Deadpool. They wanted to sell that he talks different from other characters with the color and the font change. Supposedly, if you want to know how he actually sounds in the creators' heads, he's supposed to sound like Dennis Leary from like 1990s, if you can believe that. So go check out like some 1992 Dennis Leary, and that's how Deadpool sounded in their heads, which I think is interesting. Now let's try to talk about the comic book origins. Man, I can already tell that this is going to need to be a shorter episode than usual. My voice is already giving out. But we can still talk about Deadpool. He was originally a special forces agent for the U.S. military. He kind of turned gun for hire when he flunked out of the military. But he was basically too good at killing. And so he left the military and went, like, you know, to make his money in the public sector. It was during this time that he actually meets the character Blind Owl, who we all know from the movie, for the first time on a hit job. He was actually supposed to go kill Blind Owl, but he actually ends up killing everybody but the target, Owl, and that's the beginning of their relationship. He would later meet Blind Owl again much later, like in New York, and would... It's sad to say this. He actually kidnaps her and forces her to live with him. It's kind of an abusive and not great relationship. I really appreciate how they changed that in the movies. I don't think we need to make characters be that way in the comics. Or not necessarily characters that we want to root for to act that way. He does eventually, in the comics, contract cancer. He hides it from his girlfriend, Vanessa, who's actually a mutant in the comics. Funny, in the movie, Deadpool's a mutant with latent mutant abilities. That's where his, like, power origins come from. But in the comics, he's not. He's a human. A human given basically mutant genetics to give him superpowers. But Vanessa is a mutant. She would actually later become a mercenary herself named Copycat. She has, like, low-level shape-shifting abilities. And she actually, at one point, becomes a love interest of Cable, which is very funny. When he hides his cancer from her as long as he can, and then he eventually leaves her to save her from watching him die, and he basically abandons chemo to kind of just accept his impending death. This also leads to him becoming even more ruthless and morally corrupt, like as a mercenary. He does a lot of really bad things during that time, kind of a self-destructive era of Deadpool. Later after this is when he meets up with Department K, which is a Canadian, like, science government organization that's, like, attempting to restart Weapon X. A lot of letter-based departments and programs in Canada. You got Weapon X, Department H, and Department K. So they recruit him and give him a super healing factor based off of cells they had from Wolverine. He's deemed a failure and is tossed to a place called the Hospice, which is basically where they put all their rejects of Department K to be tested on further and, like, to see what the limits of, like, human pain is and all that kind of stuff. And they kind of were also, if you read through it, it seemed like they were also trying to still fix this healing factor that they had put in him because they felt like there was still a chance of salvaging the scientific experiment. So his healing factor wasn't working, and he actually meets kind of a cellmate called Worm, this is where his name origin comes from. In the movie, it's not because he's a part of, like, a mercenary organization as a Deadpool. He's in a kind of a prison, a government prison, government science prison, and Worm is the one who's hosting a Deadpool and puts odds on how long Wade will last. He gets really depressed around this time, because he's just riddled with cancer and is stuck in this prison and just wants to end it. So this is where he, has a series of, like, unalive attempts, due to his depression. And he's kind of thwarted every single time. And so he seeks to upset this guy called the Attendee, who also we know as Ajax, who we all saw in the movies. And in the comics, he does discover Ajax's real name, Francis, and tries to use that to provoke Ajax into doing the job for him. This worked sort of, Ajax tortured him even more. And then basically tricks Wade. There's a rule in the Hospice where no one can kill the inmates except for the doctor. Dr. Kilbrew, I think his name was. And so Ajax isn't allowed, even though he's really angry and he hates that Wade keeps making fun of him, he's not allowed to kill him. And so he tricks Wade into breaking the one rule. And by he gives a Ajax gives a lobotomy to Worm, his friend, and so Wade then mercy kills Worm, who's basically brain dead, and that breaks the rule. And so then Wade is kind of put onto an operating table, and Ajax like full on rips his heart all the way out. But it actually backfires, because that apparently is what was needed to ignite his healing factor. It kind of makes sense from a movie perspective that they would try some, they would change that to something that was a little less gruesome than his whole chest cavity being pulled out. But that's it follows the same kind of line where a moment of severe trauma is what turns his healing factor on. And this is the moment where he is then covered in like malignant tumors and scars, because not only is now his whole body regenerating constantly, but also his no longer cancerous cancer cells are also constantly regenerating, and so they basically cover his body in that nastiness, and so that's where his look comes from. Also an interesting note to tell you guys, during this entire time in the hospice, while Wade was depressed and trying to end his life, he actually starts courting the embodiment of death. Death is a real character in the Marvel comics. It's a female presenting character, often with a very voluptuous and curvy body, like basically like a runway model in a skin tight cocktail dress with a skull head and a hood. Normally she is a love interest of Thanos. It's something they really didn't put into the MCU movies. But he's not some like character who's trying to balance the universe. He worships death and actually is her like consort and boyfriend during certain times. But in this Deadpool comic, Deadpool actually can like see her, which she's surprised by, and so she kind of like goes and like, all right, try to come to me, come get to me, and that's his whole plan, is trying to get to death, but he's unable to, because now he's basically unkillable. He eventually escapes, kills Ajax, and finds his way to New York, and this is where he starts his run of being like a grunt for hire. He works for a lot of characters in the comics at this time. He works for Kingpin for a certain part of it. He's even like a body double for one of Spider-Man's villains called the Hobgoblin. Spider-Man has a lot of goblins. We really focused on Green Goblin in the movies. There's a lot of goblins. But he did a lot of work there. There's also a story written where he worked with a guy named the Wingless Wizard to be part of the Frightful Four. And this is kind of like the retconned origin of his costume, where he wears a costume for the first time. The job doesn't go well, but this inspires him to make his own costume, which was the one that we all know is apparently like this cheapest thing he could find or afford, that was like in the reject bin of a costume shop. Let's time jump, though, to his service as a bodyguard. There's a lot of time after this where he involved himself with this guy named Butler, who messed with his memories constantly with this special drug. And that's where a lot of the weird timeline and canon issues of Deadpool comes from. So I'd like to skip that and get to the real actual chronological origin of Deadpool, his first appearance in the comics, which is when he was in service as a bodyguard, an assassin, for this character named Mr. Tolliver. Mr. Tolliver also went by a few other names. He was also known as Genesis or Tyler Dayspring, who is the son or adopted son of Cable. It's not quite clear. He's supposed to be the son of him, but there was like some people wrote into a story that maybe he was adopted by Cable instead, and is actually the son of Cable's clone, Strife. Anyways, Tyler doesn't like his dad, and he's also a time traveler, and he hires Deadpool to hunt down Dad, who had apparently like botched a job working for Mr. Tolliver, like in the past, with another team that Cable had before the New Mutants and X-Force. So he hires Deadpool to kill Cable, who now has resurfaced because he's leading the New Mutants. This is in New Mutants 98, when Cable was their leader. during this time, this would also be when that he in the comics meets his friend Weasel, who basically serves as an arms dealer for him throughout his history. He's joked as like one of Deadpool's only friends, even though it's like a tenuous and sometimes abusive relationship. But yeah, he's unable to kill Cable, obviously. And then appears in a bunch of comics for a couple of years later in the industry. And then it's in 1993 is when he gets his first solo issue. And so that's basically the comics book origin of Deadpool. Very truncated, very generalized. If you really want to go and read all of the back issues, this is all stuff that like people have fleshed out way later after, you know, Nicieza and Liefeld wrote him, and it's a lot of canon that was created by character people that didn't make the characters. But if you want to read some really good Deadpool stories, I do want to steer you towards some good titles to pick up if you do want to read some Deadpool, because there is some great stuff out there. You just kind of have to sift through it. So I'm going to sift through it for you and give you four good suggestions for what I think are good moments to pick up Deadpool. And the great thing about Deadpool is that thanks to this episode and the general kind of vibe of Deadpool, you really don't need to read all of Deadpool to understand jumping into Deadpool stories for the most part, because it's not really building upon each other. It's very one-off kind of feeling stuff. Not everything is, but it's just generally very accessible, which has probably led to a little bit of his popularity. But like I said a second ago, his first solo title was actually something called Deadpool Circle Chase, and that was in 1993. It was Fabian Nicieza writing for him, and Nicieza writes Deadpool very different from everyone else. In this era of Deadpool, he's a little less slapstick and humorous, but it's a lot of action and a lot of adventure, and I love it. And it's got some great art by Joe Majewera. And so if you really want to read some like good old Deadpool, Deadpool Circle Chase is something worth checking out. If you want to jump forward in history a little bit, like a decade, and read some good stuff written by another good writer, check out Deadpool Healing Factor in 2003. That's going to be Deadpool 65 to 66 and 68 to 69. 67 wasn't part of the story, but this is all written by Gail Simone. I really like Gail Simone. The story for Healing Factor isn't anything mind-blowing. It's a fun little story of Deadpool like fighting against this mind-controlling mercenary called Black Swan. He teams up with like Taskmaster and fights a bunch of other people, including like Spider-Man's villain the Rhino and all that kind of stuff. But it's basically just a good excuse for me to steer people towards Gail. I try to do that whenever I can. I like her a lot. She's actually going to be writing X-Men very soon with the whole like restart of a post-Krakoan era. So Gail Simone, worth checking out. And so yeah, I'd go check out Deadpool Healing Factor. And then shortly after that, in my opinion, the best era of Deadpool happened with Cable and Deadpool. I've talked about that a lot in the show in the past when we did, when I talked with, Alana and we did our episode a while back. That was a story that she had said she would love to reread. This is from 2004. And again, it's Fabian Nicieza writing, both Cable, and for Deadpool. And he does it like no one else can. It's a very buddy cop movie thing, like vibe, where Cable is Tom Hanks and Deadpool is the dog that drools everywhere. It's, you know, it kind of cements like why you know, they wanted to tap into that for the second movie, because this, the dynamic of the very stoic and stern and gruff Cable contrasts Deadpool really well. It's also an excuse to see a story where Cable actually gets to let loose his powers for once, which is, I feel like, not very common. Often they kind of rely on him to be like this, like, just big gun, shoot things kind of guy. But I love seeing Cable being a mutant and kind of a savior. It's also a bit queer-coded in hindsight, which makes sense why later Fabian would canonize in a tweet that Deadpool is actually pansexual, or in some instances they've described him as omnisexual. He's all sexualities and no sexualities, because it just constantly changes, which sounds very pansexual. And then the fourth suggestion was a run of Deadpool that I was not expecting to be as good as it was, but I wanted it to be because of the people that were writing it, was Deadpool Volume 5 in 2005, which was written by Jerry Duggan and comedian Brian Posehn. Jerry, I'm very familiar with from the comic books, but Brian, I didn't know. I was aware of Brian at the time of being a comedian. I liked his comedic work. He's done a lot of voice work as well. I didn't know if he had the chops for writing comics. And so I remember picking this up in the 2000s. And they nailed it. It's fun, it's innovative, it's adventurous, and also finds time to add to like some emotional gravitas to Deadpool. I would suggest you check out, start off with like the first story, which is called Dead Presidents, and that kind of runs through issues, I think all the way through 1 through 14. It's this fun story where Deadpool now has to kill the resurrected presidents of the United States. It's very funny. But you're going to want to keep reading all the way from 15 to 19 as well for this series, because it's a great Captain America, Wolverine, and Deadpool team-up story called The Good, the Bad, and the Ugly. And this is kind of my favorite era of Deadpool, of his like his titles. He's also really fun to read in Uncanny X-Force. I still want to do some stuff about that. I know we touched that a little bit when we were talking about Messiah Complex and X-Force and all that kind of stuff. I still want to get back there and read through some of those stories. This is when he had like the gray costume and all that kind of stuff. He also, I just brought up his costume. He at one point actually had the symbiote, like Spider-Man symbiote, on him. And according to his comics, he had that costume. He had the symbiote before Spider-Man found it during Secret Wars. Whether or not you want to believe in that canon, that's up to you. But yeah, that's Deadpool in the comics. A complicated and convoluted character, but has a lot of charisma. Staying power, and I'm very excited to see him in the new Deadpool and Wolverine film. The trailer was great. I'm ready. You know, X-Men 97 has got me primed to be like, okay, now we can go back to, we're entering the era of good X-Men media. Can we keep that going since we've got a good cartoon? Let's do a good live action feature film, please. John needs it. You know, I think I'm owed a good one. So that's going to be the episode. I'm impressed that I made it through about a half an hour of talking to this microphone. I can't breathe through my nose at all right now, hence why my voice is a little bit higher and I sound a little more subdued than usual. Again, I appreciate you dealing with a little bit of some lateness on this one. I'm trying to muscle through being sick. I'm a one-man show here. I don't have like a writer or editor who can help me out. But yeah, we'll probably talk a little bit more about X-Men 97 in the next episode, because I'm really enjoying the show. The show is great. If you are not watching it, you are doing a disservice to yourself. Until then, be good, be kind, be brave, and read more comics. Thanks, y'all. Bye.